All right, you're on the Arms with Glenn.
And John.
And we are coming to you, how'd you say it, last week, which
so
was just a few minutes ago.
We are recording this show in the present that will be delivered to you in the future from the past.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, there you go. So not a live show today, but that's all right.
Still just as entertaining.
Just still as awesome. All right, so I don't really obviously know what the news is. We'll make our usual predictions of politicians lie.
Yep.
Taxes suck.
Yep. CNN will still be entrenched in the greatest meme war of all time.
CNN will still be doing what CNN does, which is stupid, crappy fake
make
news.
Make up crap news.
We will still be trying to, you know, build businesses and make money. Bad guys will do bad things.
Yep.
Good people will mostly do good things.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, there you go.
And we're still at war.
And we're still at war.
And there's a chance we could be in, like, another real war.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember, everyone deployed. We're still at war.
Yeah.
People still out there doing their thing.
And pay a little bit of attention to what's going on in the world around you. Yesterday, the U.S., well, a week ago yesterday, the U.S. did a pretty awesome flyby show of force with some B-1 bombers and dropped a bunch of inert ordnance in relatively close proximity to North Korea.
Yeah.
But not on North Korea.
Yeah.
So just kind of a, hey, assholes.
Hey, we still have these things.
We can still do this thing.
Supersonic bombers from 10,000 feet.
Yeah, we can still send you legitimately back to the Stone Age if we wanted to. Stop being asshats. So.
We had a carbine class this last weekend.
Yeah, which we'll tell you about next week.
Which we'll tell you about next week. I'm sure it was awesome.
It always is.
We'll find out in a few days.
It'll be hot. It'll be hot. Students will do cool things. Someone will do a dumb thing.
Other cool classes we have coming up. So next weekend will be
this weekend.
This weekend, this coming weekend will be. it's very confusing to talk in the future from the past. So in a weekend, July 22nd, 23rd.
Okay, there we go.
We're going to have our IFAC Lifesaver Defensive Handgun classes, which are two of our most popular classes. So make sure you check those out. Remember, course refreshers get 50% off, and that's how it is always for the rest of their life. Always a good thing we do for refreshers. Then we've got, man, we got wound closure. We've got invasive trauma interventions. We've got wilderness first aid coming up. We've got our whole precision rifle series coming up. We've got field carbine. We got close contact handgun. We got all kinds of stuff coming up in the next few months. So make sure that you check out our calendar. And if you have a hard time navigating that or you have questions about specific classes, just email us info@trainingaz.com and we will definitely help you check that out.
Mm-hmm.
Get you signed up. You got a Red Bar Gear moment?
I do.
All right, go.
So today's moment is going to be about people that carry their guns as fashion accessories. A gun is not a fashion accessory. It is not a magic talisman. If you carry a gun, carry an appropriate holster with that gun. That will help it look better. Don't carry it in a floppy crap holster clipped to your front pocket. So carry your gun. Know what you're going to use your gun for. Know how to use your gun. And carry the gun that you can carry. Don't worry about what everybody says. Go to a range, shoot a bunch of different guns. Be like, you know, I really like this gun. Buy that gun. I don't care if it's a .22. I don't care if it's a .380. I don't care if it's a .45 1911. I don't care. Carry it. Know how to use it. Carry it appropriately.
All right. Today's Redwire Gear message brought to you by Redwire Gear Moment. Excuse me. Brought to you by RedwireGear.com. Make sure you check them out for the world's greatest rifle sling.
That's true.
And a pretty decent medical kit.
It's all right.
Yeah. Make sure you check that out.
No, it's awesome too. It's awesome.
So I actually want to kind of add to that a little bit. I've been seeing a lot of stuff on social media lately where they're talking about – in fact, I saw one this morning or a week ago, whatever. I saw one recently, okay, that really was interesting to me. And it had a target with a pistol laying on it. It was a well-worn Glock 19. And I can't remember the exact numbers, but it basically had four categories. And it was, you know, pistol was $500, you know, ammo, case of ammo is $250. Dollars or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, 2-day training class was $400. And this, you know, had total investment of like whatever the hell that adds up to, $1,200 or whatever. And then they had this whole post about, you know, the cost of carrying a gun. Oh, holster. Holster was another thing they had in there. And it was like, you know,
$60, $70
whatever it was. So the point is to those kinds of posts is look, and I'll say this, and again, no problem with this being recorded. I would rather see somebody who has a limited budget go out and buy a high point pistol.
Yep.
Buy a half a case of ammo.
$100
Yep. Plus the pistol. Now we're maybe we'll say $300
ish.
go take even just a one-day training class and a good holster.
And a good holster.
Not an Uncle Mike's crappy holster, which so often accompanies a High Point.
Yeah, High Point. Whatever.
So a good holster, again, $70. Mm-hmm. Okay, so now we're at, $370 or so?
Yeah.
Go take a good solid one-day class, call it $200. Mm-hmm. Now we're at $570, $600. That person with that one-day class, they've got a half a case. They got 500 rounds. They're going to burn up half of that in the class or so. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to have another couple hundred rounds to practice with. The quality of practice they're going to get, as well as the understanding they're going to have about the limitations of their firearm, whatever it may be, and a good piece of equipment, a good holster, are going to far surpass any Salient Arms, Agency Arms, Zev Wilson tricked out combat, freaking whatever Glock thing you've got that you can't shoot for piss. I have been in this industry long enough, and I shoot competition enough to see that the majority of overpriced guns
They're overpriced.
They're not held by people who can truly push them to their capabilities. People try to buy their way to success.
Yep.
I would still rather see somebody, and I know I'm not advocating that you go out and necessarily buy a High Point. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying if you had a limited number of funds,
so
let's say you had $600. We just proved, right, with some basic math that with $600, I can buy a pistol, a good holster, a half a case of ammo, and a training class for the same price as just going in and buying a brand new Glock or something like that. Would I rather someone have a Glock or, freaking MP or whatever the hell it is gun they want. Yeah, definitely I would. But I would rather that they have the knowledge and the capability.
The skill set.
The skill set, the understanding, and the ammunition to practice with as opposed to just a gun. And they go, well, now I bought this gun. Now, no, I'll put that training class off for 3 or 4 months or 5 months or 6 months or whatever until I save up the money to buy the ammo and buy the class and all that. I would rather they do. And then they're going to leave the class. Right, if they did the one-day thing, and so maybe it's not a High Point. Maybe they buy a Taurus, which I know there's good Taurus guns out there. There are. We're not huge fans of Tauruses around here, but I understand that there's some good ones out there. So, you pick up a decent one, or maybe you get a Canik. Those are actually pretty decent, and they're only a few hundred bucks. They're a
budget gun.
They're a budget gun. Even one of my favorite guns, the Ruger SR9, is a relatively inexpensive firearm. You can get the E model for, I think, like $350 or something like that. So go get one of those budget-type guns. Get a training class, get a case of ammo or half case of ammo, get a good holster, and utilize that to get the information, get the skills, and practice with. I'd rather that than someone go blow all their money on just the gun and say, oh, well, I know I'm prepared because I have this gun. It doesn't matter. Again, the most expensive gun in the world doesn't matter. So without the skill, doesn't matter. So what we're going to be talking about today is going to be measuring the results of practicing with your firearm, specifically kind of dry practice, and how to make it worthwhile, right? How to measure the results of this. So the first thing I want to talk about in training is the concept of setting standards, measuring those standards, and then pressure testing those standards, and pressure testing them in such a way that it makes you fail. One of the big issues that I always see with training stuff is that people don't – the goal of their training is not failure. It's to stroke
their ego.
Yeah. It's to feel better about themselves, to feel better about their capabilities. They're not there to fail. They're not there to see what they can't do. They just want to see what they can do. And so now
they already know what they can do. They just want to make themselves feel better.
So they want to feel better about what they can do, as opposed to pushing themselves harder and finding out what they can't do. Mm-hmm. Right. So first of all, I would say if you want to really make dry practice and live fire worthwhile, prepare to fail. Don't fail doing stupid things. Like I see some of this, and I'll call it, you can't see my air quotes, but I'm definitely air quoting training, what I call entertainment, from a lot of organizations out there who, they scoop up, they're like, oh, here's what you're going to do in this drill. You're going to pick up this 180-pound dummy, and you're going to throw it over your shoulder, and you're going to shoot one-handed with your carbine while you're engaging it. What the – are you kidding me? What the hell am I doing this for? This is pointless. So, yes, can that create failure? And then they use that and go, see, this is what it's like. No, this is not what it's like. All that's happening in a lot of training courses is people are they're
it's being, a day of shooting drills with X name.
Well, they're being entertained so much that they don't realize at the end that they didn't even learn anything.
Right.
Right. Their entertainment level is so high that the education level kind of gets overshadowed by the fact that it was basically freaking zero, right? So at the end of the day, they still suck just as much as they used to.
Or worse.
But now they also understand that they can't carry a 180-pound dummy or that they can't sprint, you know, and do all this crazy stuff or that they can't, you know, do these insane drills that are made up like, well, yeah, look at how fast this instructor can do it. Yeah, because that's all he does. He just does this drill over and over and over and over and over again, you know? Let's see the quality of his hits. Let's see him do it cold. Mm-hmm. Let's see him do it before he's warmed up with a day on the range, et cetera, right? So don't worry about that kind of stuff, right? What we're worried about here is finding our own personal failure points, realistic failure points. Obviously, throwing a 180-pound dummy over your shoulder may not be that hard for you, or it may be damn near impossible for you, mm-hmm. depending on your physical stature and your physical capabilities, right? So that's not necessarily a thing that is a huge factor for most people.
Right. There is a time and place for that type of – I'll use the word training. I'll use that word in this instance. There is a time and a place for that type of stuff. And it's after and only after you have absolutely, beyond the shadow of any doubt, mastered the fundamentals.
After you've built your fundamentals. Yeah.
Then you can move into some of this other stuff because it doesn't necessarily point to the weaknesses in your shooting. It points to the weaknesses in your processing speed for how quickly can you process a situation? How physically fit are you? You know, there is a time and a place for that stuff, but that's not where you start. That's not the basis of comparison for the average person that goes out to the range or goes out and takes a regular normal training class.
Well, I would hesitate to use the words that you've – or hesitate to use the phrase that you've mastered the fundamentals because okay. I don't think any of us have truly mastered it. But
you know what I mean.
When you have a solid foundation of fundamentals or what I would – how I often explain to students is I don't have to think about the fundamentals as much anymore.
And that's what I mean by the
phrase. Because if I'm still trying to figure out is my stance sights right, is my trigger, grip right,
yeah.
Are my sights appropriate? Oh, I got to think about my trigger press because I want to make sure I don't curl it or I don't yank it or whatever. Yeah. And also I have to carry this 180-pound dummy like – this just turns into a big entertaining thing, but not right. necessarily a really great education. Well,
and that's what I mean by mastered. You know them, you know when you mess them up, and you understand them.
Yeah. Now, I'm not saying don't add physical elements to your training. You definitely should.
Yes.
But be realistic about what you're doing. For some people out there, they're like, well, hey, man, I work in a 4-man team, and carrying my 180-pound buddy might be realistic. Well, then great, add that to your training. That's
a real thing, yeah.
Right? But – what we're talking more about here is shooting training.
Yes.
Right? Specifically shooting training. Mm-hmm. So how do we measure the results of our training? All right. So I consider the fact that there are three things that must be present, and that is the standards, the measurement, and the pressure, right, which we've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. So now let's kind of break those things down. And these can be applied to either dry practice,
mm-hmm.
what you're doing in the comfort of your own space with the air conditioning on in your sandals, right?
Yeah. Or your chonies.
Or your chonies, right?
That's when I do all of my dry practice.
And then as well as live fire practice that mm-hmm. we're doing on the range. Now, for me, dry practice – excuse me. Let me back up. Live fire practice is a validation of dry practice.
Mm-hmm.
That's all it is. It gives me an opportunity to build all these muscle memories. Dry practice gives me the ability to build all these muscle memories and figure out the small ways that I want to do things and that I want to change things and I want to speed things up so that when I go out to live fire, now I can focus on trigger press because your body knows when the gun's going to go bang and when it's not.
Mm-hmm.
I can focus now on trigger press. I can focus now on running. I can mm-hmm. focus on moving. I can focus on lifting heavy dummies. I can focus mm-hmm. on doing all this other stuff because I've validated that what I was doing dry actually works. Now, if what I'm doing dry and I go out to the range and I don't see any improvement, then what I'm doing dry isn't working.
Right. And I'm kind of in that boat. So I've started shooting the Wednesday night steel. I've had a couple of videos shot of me doing portions of stages or entire stages, depending mm-hmm. on how quickly I get through these stages. And one of the video from last week on my reload, my time died on my reload because it was not what it should have been.
Mm-hmm.
So now I know that I need to go back to my dry practice on my reloads
mm-hmm.
because I'm breaking the gun too far down. I'm looking down. I'm slow with it. Like it's something I need to go back and work on again. So when you're doing your training and you're doing your validation portion of your dry fire, if you have the opportunity, video that so that you can actually see. Because if you don't see it as a third person, you're probably not going to notice it. Because I hadn't really noticed it. Mm-hmm. Like, I'd noticed that they were a little bit slower. I didn't notice how poorly they were being done, I guess, is the most accurate term for that.
So that is a perfect example of how we identify the validation of our dry practice, right, which is in live fire. So now let's talk about the whole standards and measurement thing. Oof. If you don't have a standard, then you have no idea where you're at. So we'll often get students come to us and go like, I want to be faster. Well, how fast are you right now?
Oh, I don't know.
I don't know. Okay, well, I want to be more accurate. Well, how accurate are you right now? Well, I don't know. So let's find a way to create a standard for what you're going for. Then we have to measure that standard somehow. Now, there's two ways that we typically measure the shooting standards. We have an accuracy metric and we have a time metric, right? Because the balance of speed and accuracy is what we're always going for in the shooting world.
What?
Yeah, shocker, right?
Wow.
So we have to have an accuracy metric and we have to have a time metric, all right? Mm-hmm. And then we have to pressure test those concepts, okay? So let's talk about dry practice for a second. So I'll talk about my dry practice concepts. So there's a couple of dry practice things that I do. One of my favorite things to do, and it's to build a steadiness in my presentation, is I take – obviously dry practice should always include a completely unloaded firearm, no ammunition in the area.
Yep.
Don't be stupid. Follow the firearm safety rules, all right? Is I take an empty case – and I start with something short, so it's relatively easy to manage, so like a 9mm case. Mm-hmm. And I'll eventually work up to something like a rifle case, like a 223. The taller it is, the harder it is to manage the weight. And I balance it, so I take my gun and I put it at high compressed position up by my chest. Then I take the case and I balance it on the front sight. Now, you can start with just the slide just to get used to this, and then as you get better and better, start balancing on the front sight. And depending on your gun, some guns may have a rounded slide or some guns may have a rounded front sight. So this might not work exactly for you, but you can find a way to adapt this. And then from that high compress, now that I've got the thing balanced there, I slowly and very consistently create my presentation so that it's driving directly away from my body. As that front sight comes into my vision, it starts to get along the center line of my body. I have good, solid presentation. And then now that I've still hopefully balanced that case on the front side or slide, now I start pressing the trigger. And I do it in such a way so that as I don't move the sights. And I do this a handful of times, and it takes a lot of concentration.
Yeah,
and it takes a lot of balance to do this effectively. And when you get down to the point where you can do it relatively easily, he said change the type of thing that you're balancing on the front sight. Make it whatever it needs to be.
This is not a thing that you're looking at speed on.
No, this is not a speed.
This is not a speed thing because I don't care if you put – it doesn't matter what you put on there. You're if you do it quickly, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
It's like, and it's going to be a complete failure, and you're going to be like, "Bleh." No, this is a smoothness. This is smoothing everything out and making sure that everything is where it needs to be when it needs to be there.
This is me taking that opportunity to build good muscle memory through dry practice because that's what I'm looking to do here. So after I've done this a handful of times, all right, now I go into, you know, whatever's next. So my standard for this is to not let the object drop. And if the object drops, I stop and I restart. That's the standard. If I don't meet the standard, then I reset, right, for this particular exercise.
Now, is this like a one-time success, or do you have to have like five that were – because I know like in basketball players, you they'll shoot certain X amount of free throws. Well, until they hit 20 in a row. So if they hit seven but then they miss, they start their
count. I typically do five.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So I do five successful presentations.
Okay.
So that's my standard. The way that I measure that is simple. There is no speed metric here.
Right.
It's only an accuracy metric. And my accuracy metric is the item cannot fall.
Right.
If the item falls, then I failed the measurement, failed the standard. Now I reset. Right. And then the way I pressure test this is I do it with my right hand. And then I do it with my left hand. I do it one-handed right hand. I do it one-handed left hand. Right. I do it under different conditions. I do it outside. You know, I do it as a demonstration in a lot of training classes. Sometimes that wind is blowing and that's a bitch. I mean, like you really got to focus as I'm trying to present my gun straight out in front of all these students who are watching me do this and make sure that this freaking case doesn't drop, right? So it takes a lot more focus under different conditions. If I'm feeling sick, I still do this in my drive practice you know, concepts.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't stop doing it just because I'm not feeling up to it, right? That's how I'm pressure testing this specific right. thing. So now how do I take that and go out to validate it live, all right? So first thing I do if I'm working specifically on my draw presentation is I get in front of my target and I've got my gun in the holster concealed because I like to work from concealed because that's how I work.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes when I work open, if you watch videos of me shooting competition, you will watch me pull up my non-existent imaginary shirt, right? Because I'm so used to working concealed mm-hmm. that I'll reach back and grab a shirt, realize it's not there, bring my hand up to my left chest, and that's fine yeah. for me. It doesn't waste any time for me. So now when I go out to the range and I'm working my presentation, okay, now I have a standard. I have the measurement. So I'm going to create a standard, and we'll just say that at 5 yards – I want to put all of my shots in the size of a fist.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That is my goal. 5 yards, size of a fist. That's going to be my accuracy standard. That's the way I'm going to measure that. All right. My time standard for this, my metric, I'm about to set. All right. So what I'm going to do is as efficiently as I can, meaning without wobbling or moving the gun at all, in that almost straight presentation, just like I was doing before with balancing the case, only I'm going to try to add a little bit more physical speed to it now. I'm going to present and I'm going to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Now I've set my measurement. So how do I measure time? I've got a shot timer.
Mm-hmm.
If you're serious about getting better at shooting, get a shot timer. There's no other way to say it. You can download the ones on your phone. I don't like using the ones on my phone because I found them to be inaccurate, sometimes not quite as good. And I don't want to use my phone out there because it gets busted up and dirty and nasty. Yeah. And a shot timer is built more for that environment.
Yeah, shot timer is like $100 bucks.
$100 to $130 bucks. I highly recommend the CED 7000s, Competition Electronic Dynamics. CED 7000s are the ones we use for all of our stuff. They're compact, they're small, they have tons and tons of cool features on them. Just buy those. If you get one, please make sure you get the silicone skin. It's a little wrapper that goes around like a little shot timer condom. That's basically what it yeah. looks like. And it's perfect because I broke one a couple weeks ago because I didn't have one of those and it sucked. Because those things are not expensive to replace, or inexpensive to replace, I mean. So I use my shot timer. So I test my shots. Okay, so now I have a way to measure the accuracy. Did I get all my shots inside the fist? What was my measurement? Let's say it took me, 2 seconds, okay? So it takes me 2 seconds to do all that. Okay, so now my time standard is 1.9 seconds. Not 2 seconds, mm-hmm. 1.9 seconds. My measurement standard is now still smaller than a fist.
Yep.
Okay, so then I shoot the exercise again. This time I'm going to have to physically move a little bit faster, which means I'm going to have to either reduce the amount of time I spend on the sights or I'm going to have to physically add speed to what I'm doing.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
go ahead. Mean you set the standard cold?
Yes, that is correct.
What?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
I set the standard cold out of the holster,
no way.
Cold from the sling, whatever it is.
How does that work? Yeah. I don't understand this.
Yeah, not after I warm up and I'm all good to go.
Yeah.
Right? Set it cold. So – now,
guess what? That's how gunfights are. You're cold. You're cold when gunfights start.
So now that I've set that standard, now that's the thing I'm trying to beat.
Right.
And I'm going to fail a little until I succeed. And I'm eventually going to get a point where it's like, all right, now the standard is a half dollar and yeah. 1.2 seconds. And it's going to be a time that I've eventually worked down to where it's just like, holy crap, I'm 1.25, I'm 1.3, I'm 1.29. I just can't break that 1.2. So now how do I get better for my live fire? So now I video myself like you already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking for
that economy of motion. You're looking for the efficiency in your movement.
And I watch that video and I go, what is taking me too long?
Well, and you eventually reach a point.
And have I reached the pinnacle of what I can perform?
Yep.
Right?
And then you move into a maintenance.
And so now I look at it and go, dude, I look at the video. There's nothing I can see. I've been to a professional training class. There's nothing they can see. This is now my standard.
Yep.
Is 1.25 seconds inside of a half a dollar at 5 yards, 5 shots. That's now my standard. So now what am I going to work on next?
Yep.
Okay, so now can I do that? So now we're going to pressure test this concept, right? So now we've done the standard and mm-hmm. we've done the measurement. Now we're going to pressure test it. Cool. Now I've got my standards and that's how I can work it. I know how to measure them. I have an accuracy standard and I have a time standard. Now I'm going to pressure test it. So now I'm going to take that same thing and I'm going to do it in the dark
mm-hmm.
with lights, weapon light, handheld light. I'm going to mix it up. All right. Can I still maintain that standard? If not, What do I need to do? Am I taking my light out too slow? Is my weapon mounted light too hard to activate? Is it, you know, it's not bright enough? What's the problem here?
Right.
So I'm going to do it in low light. Now I'm going to take it and I'm going to do it on the move. So now when the timer goes off, I've got a lateral step, or maybe just walk forward, or maybe just walk back. Can I maintain that same accuracy and that same time standard? Maybe not.
Probably not.
But how close can I get to that standard? And if I'm like, oh my gosh, when I go to start moving, my movement's all messed up. I'm thinking too much about the movement, not enough about the presentation and the sights, and it totally screws me up, and I'm all of a sudden, I'm 2.2 seconds. I really screwed that up.
Well, there's your failure. Now you know that's where you learned.
Now I know. So now all I do is practice movement and presentation, movement and presentation, movement and presentation. I can just practice that dry. Now I go back to my dry practice because I've got a muscle memory skill that needs to be fixed, and I do that ad nauseum. I create a standard. I create a way to measure that standard. So maybe I mark something out on the ground. I take three flower vases and put them in my living room and go, I want to move from there to there to there, and I want it to be in such and such time. And before I get to that first flower vase, I need to have my gun out, and sights on the quote-unquote target. Okay, cool. Now I've created this situation, right? Use cones. Use freaking kids' toys. I don't care. Whatever you use.
Don't use Legos, because if you step on them, you'll be sad.
Son of a bitch.
Especially if you're barefoot.
So then I take that once I think I've got it down, and I go back to live fire to validate it. And then here's where I validate.
So there's like it's like this process thing.
Endless loop, man.
It's crazy.
It's an endless loop, right? And then I get to the point where I think I'm okay. Now I'm moving and I'm shooting and I'm maintaining my acceptable accuracy standard, whatever that is for you. I'm maintaining my acceptable time standard, whatever that is for you. And cool, I'm good to go. Now how am I going to pressure test this? Well, now the next time it's raining, I'm going to go out and I'm going to run this drill. Well, then I find out that when my stuff's all soaking wet, I can't get a good grip on my gun. So now I've got to go modify my gear. I got to get stipples, or I got to get an aftermarket grip, or a Talon grips, or Hogue slip-on, or whatever the hell it is you want. And now I've got to modify my gear. And now that I've done so, eventually I work up to the point where, like you said, I've reached this pinnacle.
Yep.
Right, I can move and shoot it. I can do it in the rain. I can do it in the dark. Man, there is nothing. There is no time or opportunity where I cannot perform this skill. So now I go back to the videos and I go, is there something holding me back? Is my trigger holding me back? Mm-hmm. Are my sights holding me back? Maybe this pistol is holding me back. Maybe
I had an issue with
this holster is holding me back. Right? You had an opportunity to experience that.
Yeah, I when I first started working for independence training, I carried an FNX9. Well, I carried a 45. I carried a 1911. And I was like, okay, this is terrible and expensive and it hurts a lot. Mm-hmm. So I went to something similar to that in the FNX9. Same external safety. But there was something about that pistol that, regardless of the dry practice, the live fire, regardless of what I was doing, I was not able to fix this one problem I had. I don't understand it.
It was an equipment limitation, man.
Yeah. So then I go to a Glock because I decided to change the position from which I carried. So I go to a Glock and I notice that this problem is significantly less than it was with the FN. Mm-hmm. And now I'm back to fixing that problem because I changed the trigger in my Glock. So now I'm back to, I have to figure out what I'm doing because my dry fire is fine. Mm-hmm. I can balance a 22 casing, probably balance a 223 casing on my front sight post during my trigger press during my dry fire. But it's when I get to my live fire that I'm screwing that up. So I have to figure out what I'm doing in that process, and that's just going to come through, I think, a lot more trigger time, because you reach a point where you need some trigger time. You need some live fire.
Definitely.
So I need a little bit more trigger time on that to get used to firing that trigger.
Now, you mentioned something that's important, right, which is we need trigger time, but we also have to be aware of what we're doing during our trigger time, because there is a huge difference between shooting and training. And I will say this, all right, everyone on the show knows, well, what was the comment we had a few weeks ago that Mason read, the I'm Smarter Than You show or something like that? Okay, I'm Smart and You're Dumb show. That's what it was.
Yeah.
I'm smart. So in a classic Glenn, I'm Smart and You're Dumb moment, I'm going to talk about Instagram and Facebook training for a second, okay? Most of that shit ain't training.
Nope.
It's shooting.
Yep.
That's all it is.
Yep.
It's people shooting. They're shooting targets. There's no measurements happening. There's no standards that are there.
And
they're
just fucking
running around and shooting targets. And that's all that they're doing.
But if they are, They're already warmed up. They've run this drill 17 times today.
Because they didn't get the right video coverage from the last
this
one.
This is the best one they had. This is the one that was the most accurate and the fastest.
And looked the coolest.
Yeah. Don't compare yourself to these people. You're not these people.
Remember, everybody only puts, I shouldn't say everybody, the most of people only put the best of what they are and what they do on Instagram, on Facebook, on whatever.
Go back and compare
yourselves to these people.
Go back and watch my Wednesday night still videos on my Instagram page. You'll see me miss. You'll see me screw up reloads. You'll see me like overrun stopping points.
Make mistakes.
Like I screw up because I'm a human. I'm not a robot.
But that's not common.
No,
right. That's not a common thing. So it's important to remember that you can't compare yourself. And again, people are like, oh God, he's so fast. Let's see his target. What's his accuracy standard? What's his time standard? What is he trying to accomplish, or she? What are they trying to accomplish here? You know, like there are few people out there that they can do that best all the time, every time, under a measured standard, under a measured capability. You know, that shit bothers me to no freaking end, right? So first of all, don't look at that crap, okay? Second of all, go out and get trigger time, but understand that a range session does not have to include mag dump after mag dump after mag dump. My warm-ups before a class typically consist of 5 to 12 rounds.
Yeah, I'll go through a mag.
You know, it depends on what I'm doing, but 5 to 12 rounds is typically a warm-up for me. And what I do is I create, and I have a couple drills that I run, exercises that I run, that are recorded. Mm-hmm. Shocker, right? Mm-hmm. John has talked a lot on the show over the years about keeping training journals and recording your results. I record results. And the way that I record results is I say, all right, under these conditions, it was this. I would say it was sunny. It was 98 degrees, and I was at Cowtown Range.
And right. I skipped breakfast this morning.
And if there's anything specific, like I'm working with the new holster, I put that in the notes.
Yep.
Right? Maybe I skipped breakfast this morning. I drank two energy drinks this morning.
Maybe I didn't sleep well last night. Or maybe it was a short night of sleep.
If there was something I think might affect my performance, I put it down.
Yep.
Sometimes my mind's not right. You know, I'm thinking about something. I put that down. And then I record my accuracy and my time.
Yep.
Did I drop shots out of the standard? I don't say, yeah, I got 5 out of 5. I say I dropped 0, dropped 1, I dropped 2. I don't give a shit where they went. They were not where I wanted them to go, mm-hmm. right? And then I have my time standard. It was 30 seconds or whatever if I have this big elaborate movement exercise or whatever, all right? And then I come back, you know, whenever I do it next and I record the next results. If there's anything particularly interesting, I put it in the notes. Over time, I will find patterns. I will say, hey, look at this. When I go faster, I shoot not as well.
Yep.
Or when I'm shooting not as well, I'm also going slower. What the hell is that all about? Okay, well, I'm thinking too much. I'm not allowing my muscle memory to take over. So I can see these types of things. And as I'm looking down, I'm like, damn, look, I'm not really getting any better. Right? I'm about to say I'm always, you know, dropping 0 and I'm at 26 seconds. And I can't seem to get better in 26 seconds.
Well, maybe that's your pinnacle.
Then maybe that's where I'm at. So now I go back and I maybe video it and I look and I go, is my equipment limiting me? Is it my movement? What is it about it that I can't break 26? Maybe it's a gun. So maybe I go grab another pistol out of the safe and I go, I wonder if I can break 26 seconds with this one. And all of a sudden I'm at 23 seconds with this one. Well, that's something to consider. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to consider changing, you know, my daily carry or my competition gun or whatever the hell it is, right? So that's a way to record them. But an important thing to do here is to always have that standard, that measurement. So like I have one I call the roadside workout. Roadside workout is a pretty simple exercise I do. Mm-hmm. I used to do it on the side of the road.
Like constantly.
When I lived up north and I worked down here in Phoenix. And I was constantly driving up and down the road. I mean like constantly 4 or 5 days out of the week.
You probably spent enough money in gas that you could have bought a house.
You
should have bought a hybrid at least.
I averaged about 15 to 20 hours a week in my truck. It was like a whole day of my life driving every week. So what I would do, because there's so many places between here and there to pull off on the side of the road and shoot.
Well, anymore because they're all on fire.
Well, right now they're all on fire. But but when they're not all on fire, all right, so many places you can pull off. And I mean like it would take me 10 minutes on average to pull off. I would set up a quick target. I would shoot this exercise. I would grab my stuff and my brass and I would jump back in my truck and go to wherever I was going. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would do this before I would get to the range to teach a class because – I knew as soon as I showed up, you know, you guys were there, so there was bullshitting and trash talking, and then, you know, and then and then we're setting up stuff, and then
the students there, and then 47 the students minutes
show
early.
Up way early, and they want to talk to you and whatever, and then I would never get around to it. So a lot of times I'd do it even on the way, or sometimes even home from class. So the roadside exercise is a really simple one that I would do. What I would do is I would start 25 yards away from the target.
Mm-hmm.
Target, loose term. Yeah. Okay.
Rock, stick, cardboard box, water bottle, whatever.
Maybe not a rock, but I would pick something. And sometimes I would literally just have like a cardboard box that I would flatten down on, put it in my back seat. Mm-hmm. And when I got there, I'd just open it up. I'd grab a Sharpie marker. I would draw about a fist-sized circle or whatever my accuracy for my standard accuracy was on that. And that's all I would use. I'm not setting up this elaborate targeting system. And so I would set it up. I used a bottle before, a can, like a Rockstar can, you know. I forgot my cardboard box a couple times. I'm like, shit, what am I going to use? Hey, I always have an empty Rockstar can floating around my truck. So I was like, let's use this. This is my accuracy standard. If I miss this thing, I screwed up.
Yep.
Right? So my exercise would be like I'd start back at 25, two hands, two shots, nice and slow, take your time. Then I would move forward up to 15 yards. So I would run 10 yards,
mm-hmm.
a little bit closer, nice and slow, two shots, right? Then I would run forward to about 7, 8, 9 yards, right? Somewhere in that ballpark, right? And now, again, two shots, but faster, significantly closer.
Mm-hmm.
So I should be pushing myself at this point for sure,
mm-hmm.
right? And now I've run a little bit and I've gotten, you know, the adrenaline's pumping a little bit and I'm only still at 6 rounds. Now I switched single hand right, and on the move forward, finish off the 4 rounds, 1, 2, 3, 4, at the target, finishing before I break that 2 arms length distance,
mm-hmm.
meaning that I've got to crack these rounds off in the next 3 to 4 yards. So mm-hmm. my movement needs to be sufficient enough and my accuracy and timing needs to be sufficient enough. So then that's my accuracy standard. All right, so then how do we measure this? Okay, we have our measurement that we have for accuracy, whatever size target it is, and then we time it. So again, bring the shot timer, set it in an unknown delay, hanging around my neck, put it on my pocket, whatever, and then beep, when it beeps, out comes the gun, and here we go.
Yep.
You know, and then, of course, it records my last shot so I can see. And so now I can measure, when was my first shot? God, it took me 2.5 seconds to get the gun out of the holster and put one round on target. All right, my next shot, okay, I was doing pretty good there. And then I can start to look at the times between shots, or what's often referred to as splits, but I can start to look at that. Mm-hmm. I can look at the gaps. How long is it taking me to move?
Yeah.
How long is it taking me to transition to one hand? How long is it taking me to make all these 10 shots total? And now I can use that as – there's so much information I can extrapolate from just this one exercise. I stressed several skills. I moved.
Mm-hmm.
And then I shot. I mm-hmm. moved while shooting. I did some distance shooting. I did some close-range shooting. I did some single-hand shooting. You want to mix it up even more? Grab some dummy rounds. Throw them in your magazine randomly. Force yourself to handle failure to fire.
Do it moving backwards.
Start the exercise close and move it backwards.
Yep.
Take that exercise and take your gun and – or take your magazines, I mean, and load them randomly so that they both add up to 10 rounds.
But somewhere there's a reload.
But somewhere in there you're going to be forced to reload. Maybe do it with 3 magazines, you know, where you've got 3, 3, and 4, or maybe in 1 magazine you only put 2. Mix them up, stick a couple on your hip, put the other one in the gun, don't pay attention to what you did, and now work through it and force yourself to assess and work through reloads. Mark this down when you're doing all these, right? So now I'm stressing even more skills. Now instead of switching single hand right, I do single hand left. You know, it's all these ways that I can take 10 simple rounds, and I could take that drill or that exercise and I could reduce it to 5 rounds. I could do 1 from each distance and then just 2 on the move. So you really want to conserve ammo? You got 5 rounds now. You can do that twice, 10 rounds, and you're done. A lot of times I would run it backwards. I would run it forwards and then I would run it backwards. And then I'd pick up my 20 rounds of brass, which was easy, grab my target, whatever it was, toss it back in the truck, and off I am. Not everyone has access to this kind of stuff. So what about if we have to do an exercise like that at a range where we can't move, or at, you know, you don't have all this public land that we have out here? What if I have to do it at a range where I've got to be stationary? Well, nothing really changes. Let's say I've got to do it in an indoor range. All right, I've got my little thing up there that allows me to move the target in closer or farther, depending on, sometimes it's just a little notch you push, sometimes it's a button or a switch, or sometimes you can pre-program them with computer stuff, like at the one up in Camp Verde. That was a cool one. But, you know, so I can pre-program. So great. Pre-program it if possible. Otherwise, fire, 1, 2, record that time.
Yep.
Then move it back, stop it randomly. Move it back for the count of 2. 1, 2, stop. Pick it up, shoot that. What was that time? Maybe you can't time the entire exercise, but you can time each individual engagement. And you can see, even if I have to be from an indoor range where I have to pick it up from the table and shoot, great. How long does it take me to pick it up from that table and shoot? What video myself? What am I doing when I'm picking it up from that table that's making me take longer or not allowing me to get as effective of hits? Watch yourself. Am I flinching? Am I jerking the trigger? Watch your trigger press in slow-mo. Every phone now has the capability to put a slow-mo on. Watch your trigger finger in slow-mo. You will, if you are shooting low or whatever, you will see that little front sight go boop and dip just a little. And when it does, boop, that's when your shot's going. So you can't always necessarily see that with the naked eye because it's so fast. And the recoil may take the gun back up and it doesn't look like it's going down, but your shots are going down.
Yeah.
Right? Record yourself. Pressure test this by changing the circumstances. Pressure test it. The ultimate way to pressure test all of this, of course, it was force on force.
Yeah.
So pressure test all of it with force on force or UTMs when possible. So now I've got
or
my accuracy.
Or airsoft if you're limited to that.
Or airsoft or whatever you got, right? Yeah. Paintball even works to an extent, right? Some of those Tiberius paintball guns are decent enough for this purpose. So pressure testing these things under different circumstances, under different conditions and ways that make you uncomfortable, force on force, all those are ways to pressure test. So here's how we measure our results with standards, with actual measurements of those standards, and then with some way to pressure test that, whatever way makes you uncomfortable, and just keep increasing that uncomfort level. So eventually what we get to is eventually we get to the point of you're going to take this 180-pound dummy.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're going to throw it over your shoulder. Yeah. And then you're going to single hand with your carbine engage these 5 targets on the move while you're, you know, evacing this dummy. And that all may get to that point.
Right.
But if you don't allow yourself to build up those fundamentals, like you mentioned earlier, build them to the point where they're
you're not thinking about them. It's
I don't
a
have
natural
to think about
thing.
Them anymore. Then all I'm really doing is damaging my ability to perform those fundamentals because I'm thinking about too many other things. So, yes, that is eventually a way to pressure test your fundamentals eventually.
Yeah.
Potentially. I'm not even saying that's necessarily a good exercise. Yeah. It's just, is that practical for you?
So something totally practical in my life to work towards is carrying a 35-pound child in one arm while shooting with one hand.
Yeah.
And moving and running and dodging and dipping and diving. And I mean, you know, that's a reality in my life because I have a 45-pound child and I have a 20-pound child. Mm-hmm. So, you know, got one kid on my back and one kid on my arm. Mm-hmm. Whatever. I don't know.
But that's, you know, a possibility.
That's a possibility. There's also something that that we rarely mention in these discussions because at a certain point you are gonna reach a physical limitation that you have. You're gonna reach a financial limitation that you have. You're gonna reach a pinnacle. Mm-hmm. Learn to accept that you may not be able to go beyond that point for whatever reason. You know, you have to learn to accept your limitations. Now, there are people out there, oh, people don't have limitations. That's not true. People have limitations. Mm-hmm. Your body can only you can only put on so much muscle. You can only get so much faster. Mm-hmm. You can only shoot so accurately at such a certain distance. Like, you have limitations. The human body has limitations. The human mind has fewer limitations, but there are still limitations. Learn to accept that limitation, but try. Mm-hmm. Keep trying.
Well, and when you hit that peak, when you hit that pinnacle, when you hit that potential limitation, now is the time where you go, okay.
You evaluate the entire system.
Exactly. So, okay, I've got this skill. The equipment is as good as I can get it, whether that's as good as I can afford. It's as good as I can. Hey, maybe a stock Glock or a stock XDS or a freaking stock High Point is as much as you can afford. And you have pushed this piece of equipment as far as you can possibly push it, and it ain't going to go any further.
Nope.
And you've done as good as you can do with it. Fine. And you can't afford any more. Fine. Now we look at the whole system. So now we go, what else can we work on? Is my physical fitness holding me back?
Probably.
Is my diet holding me back? Is my lack of sleep holding me back?
Is my chronic dehydration
holding me back?
Right.
Is my range holding me back? Do I need to go seek out a better facility? Maybe it means driving an extra 30 minutes, but maybe I get to have the capability to do stuff I couldn't do before.
Yep.
You know, maybe driving, maybe going and talking to that farmer or that rancher is going to be worth it. Like, hey, man, here's what I want to do. You're relatively close to me. I know you got a bunch of cattle on your land, but, you know, you live in a state where it's mostly private land. Here's what I'd like to do. I'd like to come in here and find a spot, me and just me,
yeah.
right? Or me and my training partner, me and my wife or spouse or whatever. We just want to come in here. And all we want to do is shoot into this berm, or we'll build a berm, or we want to shoot into your dry pond or whatever,
mm-hmm.
right? Because we want to have that capability. I've had to have a lot of conversations with private landowners for hunting privileges mm-hmm. in different states that I hunt in. And I find that as long as you approach them in a professional manner, you're not always going to get told yes, but you're not always going to be like kicked off of someone's property. They might be like, hey, you know what? That's just not what I'm really into. And it's like, cool, man. Do you know? Do you have any neighbors that you think might be interested right. in that? Because, you know, I really want to become a more proficient armed citizen. I've even had, from a hunting privileges standpoint, I've had people call me back months later and be like, you know what? I've got some coyote problems because I'm using hunting predators. I've got some coyote problems. I was thinking about it. You know, you're welcome on my land, but don't whatever. Yeah. Right? Like, I had one guy I hunted for is like, don't ever kill the bobcats. My wife loves them. Well, that really sucks because we really like dumping bobcats, and the pelts are worth a lot of money. At the time, I was selling a lot of fur, but it's like, no problem, dude. You know yeah. what I mean? I will happily come on your property and obey exactly whatever you set forth for me.
Yep.
So then, of course, that opens you up to a different level of responsibility. But sometimes they may be like, well, you know, you may have to sweeten the pot a little bit and be like, well, you know, what if I paid you $100 a month? What if I paid you $50 a month? What if I paid you $30? What if I paid you a couple $100 a year or something? Whatever it is that's going to take them. And then maybe you can't afford that, right? So ask them, hey, tell you what, the next time you have a fencing project, yeah. the next time you're gathering cattle, the next time you're branding, the next time you're farming some fields, the next time you're fixing an irrigation canal, can I come out? Could you use some free help? And I would trade that assistance for
this amount of access,
a couple of hours a week,
yeah,
shooting into the far back part of your property.
Yep.
You know, and likely you're gonna find a solution. You are going, if you really want to get better at this, you're going to find a solution that's going to allow you to be able to do these things. Because I understand that most public ranges don't allow you to do anything but stand in the stall and shoot.
Yeah. Now here's the other side to your limitation, is once you hit that, whatever it may be, for whatever reason, don't stop maintaining that. You have to continue to keep that standard, because if you stop and you're like, oh, well, I've maxed out, there's nothing else I can do, I quit. Well, now when you go back, guess what you're doing? You're starting all the way over. Well, not all the way over, but you're starting over again. So once you reach that pinnacle or that limitation, whatever it is that you've set, okay, this is where I want to be, I'm pretty sure I can't go beyond this.
Right.
You have to work to maintain that. So mm-hmm. your dry practice is still there. Your live fire validation is still there. Mm-hmm. Your pressure testing is still there to make sure that you're maintaining, because guess what's going to happen? You can't maintain it all the time. Mm-hmm. You're always going to have something to work on, to mm-hmm. work back to that standard. There's always something. It's like right now with me and my reloads. Like I have to fix that. I know that is killing me on time. I know it is, because I am performing them ridiculously sloppy and slow.
Now, some dry practice tools that you can use that also help you measure are things like CERT pistols,
mm-hmm.
laser light systems.
Yeah.
You know, I've got one of those set up in my son's room. He started shooting competition, and he almost views the laser light thing as kind of a fun little exercise game thing to
do.
He's
game.
Got a little target. He's got some knockdown cans. It's a lot of fun. And he's certainly getting better.
Yeah.
You know, he's certainly getting better when he's out there shooting on steel. Yeah, so there you go. But it's like there's a lot of tools out there, and some of these tools are really useful. We saw that. What was that one system that we saw at the C2 birthday? Do you remember that crazy thing? They were just across from us, and they had that crazy, like, elaborate system
for dry practice.
It was odds like $1,200 or something. Like, yeah, that's not happening. So
it was like this. It was an LED panel mm-hmm. with like a laser light type of pistol, mm-hmm.
and you could program it.
And you could program it to like square here, square here, square there, or reducing size square after so many hits. So you'd start with like a big square. So you program it. Once I hit that twice, it reduces in size. Mm-hmm. Once I hit that twice, it reduces in size.
Which is perfect for what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Standards and measurement. But the problem was the system was cost prohibitive for the average person.
Yep.
So some of these systems are great. I would say that the CERT pistols and laser light pistols and things like that are some of the better, more cost-effective.
But, I mean,
they're
still
going to cost you a few
at,
$100.
Yeah. $200 to $500-ish for
So it really just depends on what your capabilities are.
Yeah.
You know, as far as financial capabilities.
Well, dude, my kids, I borrowed the laser light thing for a while when we first got it. My kids loved it. Mm-hmm. You know, like my 3-year-old's hitting bullseyes at like 20 feet with that thing. Mm-hmm. He's like, oh, this is fun, Dad. Pew, pew, you know. So, yeah, all right, cool.
So it's just one of those things where you have to determine how much money you're willing to put into this.
Yep.
How much money are you willing to invest in getting better at shooting?
How much time are you willing to invest?
For us, shooting is a major part of my life. It is my life.
Yeah.
It's what I do for a living. It's what I talk about on shows. It's what I interview about. It's what I write articles about. It's what I compete. Everything I do in some way, shape, or form pretty much has to do with shooting. So for me, improving is very, very important. I was talking to a friend of mine recently who's like average dude. He's a school teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he owns a Glock.
Mm-hmm.
He keeps it loaded in a safe in the bedroom, and that's it.
Yeah, that's it. That's all it is for him. It's a thing to use in case something happens.
If someone breaks into his house, he's going to pull out this gun and shoot him. So we started talking about his practice levels. And so one of the basic standards I talked to him was, well, how fast can you get to your safe? And he was like, I don't know. It's in the closet. Well, I'm like, okay. So do you always keep the closet floor clear? Do you always keep a path to that safe clear? And he was like, I don't think so. I go, okay, so let's start talking about developing standards, measurement, and pressure testing just for getting to your safe. Forget about the whole shooting thing. Let's just get to the gun, right? And so he started developing this training regimen of he would set random alarms so that he would have to wake up in the middle of the night and go. And several times he tripped over stuff and he bumped into things and the closet door was closed. He damn near knocked himself out one night. I mean, all kinds of stuff like that where he was like, oh my gosh, look at all these impediments to me even getting to my gun, which caused him to go, screw all this. I'm moving the safe next to the bed, right? Because screw going into the closet. It takes way too much time and it sucks. Yeah. So then we started working on him, and this is all stuff I'm doing remote, right? He's not even getting personalized training from me. I'm just helping him develop standards, ways to measure those standards, and ways to pressure test them. That's it. So then he takes that and he goes, okay, now we're going to start the dry practice routine, dude. We're just going to get you getting an unloaded gun out of the safe and presenting it towards a target and engaging effectively. That's all we're going to work on now. So we worked slow. We set a standard for how long it was going to take him to do this. We kept making that standard lower and lower and lower and lower until eventually he hit a pinnacle. He can physically not get the gun out of the safe and get it on target any faster than X.
Yeah.
Okay? So now we went ahead and we started loading the gun. He got some dummy rounds. We got a magazine. We painted it bright yellow so he didn't mix it up with real live magazines. It was always loaded with dummy rounds. And he is working on that. And all he's working on is getting the magazine into the gun and racking one into the chamber because he was still uncomfortable.
And now getting on target.
And after he did that for a while, he's like, how can I get faster? And I go, dude, store the gun with one in the chamber.
Yeah.
So he's got some self-introspection. He's like, yeah, that totally makes sense. This is slowing me down. So now we're getting the gun out of the safe with one in the chamber. We're presenting towards the target and we're clicking. And it's just this process of by the time we're all done with this, he's getting to the gun so damn fast. Faster, I would say, than the majority of gun owners
who
carry every day. And he still has not fired a live round.
Yep.
Then we go to the range.
And we bring our cot and we bring our safe.
And then we start working. Now we're just going to work on fundamentals of marksmanship, dude. This is all we're going to do now. And so that's what he's been working on now. He's in that process of, I want to be able to hit my target 100% of the time. He's got an accuracy standard that's acceptable to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, I want to hit this target 100% of the time. Now he's started working on the low light thing. He's got a weapon light now. You know, so now he's got a light attached to the end of the gun because that makes sense. Now that we're moving into a different type of pressure testing, adding a light to the gun makes sense. Not everybody can start at the level that we're at. Where we're like, got it. This is all the cool stuff we need. We need to be able to do this. And I'll tell you what, man. He can get to his gun so incredibly fast in the house. I would put him up against most shooters I know, and he would fucking kill him because he is so fast because he practices it nonstop. He has eliminated all ineffective movements from that whole process. You could throw anything in his way, and he is so fast because that was priority number one to him when we started. I didn't throw all the whole, look, bro, by the end, we're done with this. You're going to freaking have a weapon light. I'm going to have you shoot and moving with UTMs. That'll melt at his brain. It was like, started with a casual conversation of, well, how fast can you get to your gun, man? Well, I don't know. Well, let's find out.
Yep.
You know, and now he worked on that so much because in his mind, it was so important to get to the gun. Well, then once he finally got to the point he could get to the gun so fast, he hit that pinnacle. I can't do any faster. It was like, cool, now let's see how you shoot. And he couldn't, and it sucked. Now it was like, okay, well, now you can't shoot because you don't have a magazine in the weapon, so let's work on that. Well, now you can't shoot because you're not very good at shooting, so let's work on that. Well, now you can't shoot because it's dark in your house and you can't see shit, so let's work on that. You know, it's just like one of these things where the more standards we added, the more we measured the standards, and the more we pressure tested them, the more he self-identified the problems that he was having.
Yep.
So without those standards, without a way to measure the standards, without any way to pressure test the standards, and whatever that may mean to you, whether it is as simple as doing it in an uncomfortable circumstance, such as you're right-handed, now you're shooting left, you're doing it in the rain, you're doing it when you're sick, you're doing it in the dark, to all the way up to and including force-on-force, full-on shoot-house-type scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that pressure test means to you, all right, however far you can take it, throwing a 180-pound dummy over your shoulder, right? Whatever it takes to pressure test you in your situation is fine. But it all starts with those standards and measurement. You know, I get a lot of emails, and part of the reason we're doing the show is because I got so many emails over a show we did several months ago about, well, it's great dry practice techniques, but how do I measure that? This is how you do it. I cannot tell you how fast or how accurate you are right now. I have no idea. Only you can determine that. So determine that using absolute metrics of measurement, things that can be repeated over and over and over and over again. I like in our classes, John seen me do it a lot, I use the fist of my hand. If I can make a fist and I can cover your targets to me, or I can cover your group under movement and all that, that's an acceptable group. Mm-hmm. Now, when we're standing there doing marksmanship, that's too big.
Yeah.
Depending on the distance, that's too big, right? But at typical room distance, that's too much. We need to shrink that down. But when we start moving and getting more, you know, dynamic or whatever, a fist is a good measurement. So I often say, like, okay, a fist is what I want my group to be. If I extend all my fingers and my thumb into the palm of the hand, that's as big as I want my group to be. If it's any bigger than that, I'm doing too many things wrong, and it's time to shrink it back down to that fist.
Yep.
So if you're shooting inside of a fist, you're probably moving too slow or spending too much time on your sights. Now, if I got a couple rounds outside the fist, that's okay. Shit happens. You've experienced failure. We talked about at the beginning of the show. Failure is required to get better. So great. You've experienced failure. You're doing well. If all your shots 100% of the time are inside that, you're going too slow. You're not pushing yourself. You're patting yourself on the back, and basically it's ballistic masturbation. You're just doing something that makes you feel good, and that's it.
Yep.
Right? So now we open up the palm of the hand, and now we go, okay, if I'm outside the fist but I'm still in the palm of the hand, then my group size is still acceptable, not good, but acceptable for me to work at. So now I can start working until it's getting smaller and smaller and back and underneath the fist. Now, if most of my shots are outside that palm of the hand, or even if a lot of them are outside the palm of the hand, you're doing something wrong, and you need to correct that to bring all your shots back inside the palm of the hand to eventually get back inside the fist. Now, when I get back inside the fist, it's time to push something harder. It's time to find out what gear is limiting me or what my movement's limiting me or whatever. You know, for accuracy standards, I'm a lot different. I use a lot of, you know, one-inch dots. When I'm just shooting, I use one-inch dots a lot. I'm a big fan of them. They're very small. They're a good measurement.
And if you can hit a one-inch dot, you pretty much no problem hitting a person.
Yeah, if I'm doing okay from a static position,
yeah.
You know, now I try to move and hit that one-inch dot. Well, maybe that's not realistic for me. I mean, that hits my limitations. So now maybe I go to a two-inch dot. For my movement, my standard is a two-inch dot.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever. Whatever your standard is going to be is whatever it's going to be. You want to use a torso target and say, I'm going to shoot in the head and shoot in the chest. I don't care what your accuracy standard is.
Just pick one and stick with it.
Just pick one.
And work it.
And then work a time. And honestly, a shot timer is the only way to make that happen.
Yep.
So get yourself a shot timer and start working that time metric on how to get better. And then when you think you got it, pressure test it. Video yourself. Find out what you're doing wrong. Go back to dry practice. Fix it in dry practice through an insane amount of reps. You should be dry practicing 10 to 1. For every 10 dry practice rounds you fire, you should fire maybe one live fire. Maybe. You know, but when you're working on a new skill, it's going to take a lot of repetition. How many times as a kid did it take you feeding yourself with a fork to quit stabbing yourself in the face? A lot. It took a lot as a little baby.
Yeah.
To get the food successfully from there to here.
Yeah.
Right? It was very – now we don't even think about it. We've done it so many times, we don't think about it. You want to mess with yourself? Do that shit with your other hand.
I did.
It's weird.
Took me a week and a half.
Yeah, it takes a long time.
The first week and a half of Marine Corps boot camp, I could not eat.
And how much focus does it require?
All of it.
Oh, you can do it. Oh, I can pick up a spoon with my left hand and eat cereal. It feels odd. Write with your left hand if you're right-handed. Start doing things with your other hand. And some of you are like, well, I'm ambidextrous. Cool.
Good for you.
That's cool. Some people are super ambidextrous. Adam, for example, jerks off with both hands efficiently.
Not at the same time.
Oh, one's over. Yeah, definitely not at the same time.
Yeah, definitely not the same.
Oh, one's the over technique, the other one's the under technique. Oh, okay.
Oh, opposite direction.
Are you jerking off an elephant? What are you doing with those hands? What the hell?
That is super weird. I'm not sure what's going on over there.
So anyways.
All right.
So that's I think about the most we can spend on that particular topic. If you have questions about dry fire, your dry fire routine, or your live fire routine, and you want us to give you some input, then you have to email us.
Yeah.
info@trainingaz.com, or of course shoot us a message over on the Arms Room Facebook page, and we'll give you more information on it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll give you our feedback, which is going to be limited and anecdotal, okay? Because we're not there with you and we can't see exactly what you're doing. But certainly we can help you develop some routines. You know, I want more people to spend less time going to the range and just banging through hundreds and thousands of rounds. That's just shooting. I want more people getting good training. And good training does not have to be a high-volume exercise.
Mm-mm.
It really doesn't. All right, so that's it. Anything else you think to add, John?
No. Right. Not really. I think we pretty much got that one.
Get out and do it. I can say
that. Yeah, go out and do it. Don't be scared. Don't be afraid of failure. Failure's your friend. You don't get stronger by not lifting weights.
True enough.
You don't get stronger by not breaking your muscle tissue. So you're not going to get better at shooting without breaking some habits.
And without some failure.
Yep, you got to have failure.
People want to know, how do you guys get good? Pain. It's a lot of failure and a lot of pain. That's how we've gotten better. All right, remember, you can bring us out to train with you. Email us, info@trainingaz.com, to get our hosting information. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube sometimes.
Sometimes.
The Arms Room Show, Independence Training, and Redwire Gear. We are proud members of the Heroes Media Group. Thanks to Adam. Big thanks to Adam for filling in for Mason last couple weeks. And then you'll be back next week as well. So 3 weeks of nothing but Adam.
Nothing but success.
Nothing
on the boards.
But the board working 100% of the time. Well done, Adam. Right. Got the band back together.
Woo.
Next week, we're going to have Russell from KE Arms on the show. He's been on the show plenty of times. You guys should be definitely familiar with him. He's going to talk to us about product development, test and evaluation, and how that process actually happens. And surprisingly, it happens thanks to a lot of shooters like you.
Yep.
So he's going to talk a little bit more about that. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.